Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by DesignCrowd, a website that helps startups and small businesses outsource or crowdsource custom graphics, logos, and web design from over 500,000 designers around the world. Check out designcrowd.com/hack. That's designcrowd.com/hack to learn more and receive a special $100 VIP offer when you start your next project. That's designcrowd.com/hack. Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a New York Times best-selling author, international speaker, and an obsessive entrepreneur. He currently owns five massively successful companies, including a real estate company with over $400 million in property, and he is also the founder of Cardone Acquisitions and Cardone Enterprises. He's the author of seven books. His current and very soon-to-be-released book is called Be Obsessed or Be Average. It's a call to action for you to become obsessed with your life and business or live a simple and average life. This conversation, I didn't know where it was going to go, but I was absolutely blown away by it. I think you will be too. Now, let's hack Grant Cardone. As a listener of Hack the Entrepreneur, you yourself are an entrepreneur, or else you have that feeling inside of you that you want to be and you're going to step up and do it soon. So whether you are a seasoned business owner looking to grow your portfolio, or you're just starting to look for your first business, joining a franchise can be a great way to get a leg up on your competition. Franchise Help is here to connect motivated entrepreneurs like you with franchises that can help your new business succeed. Whatever you're passionate about, there's a franchise that can help you build it smarter and faster using time-tested methods that work. You can own your own business, but you don't have to go it alone. Franchising gives you a proven business plan, the strength of a larger organization, and the recognition of an already established brand. Visit franchisehelp.com/hack to take the franchise quiz and find out your next business. That's franchisehelp.com/hack. We are back on Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very, very special guest. Grant, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, John, for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely my pleasure. This is going to be a blast, I can tell. So Grant, you are a man that wears many hats, but today we're talking to Grant, the entrepreneur. So Grant, could you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, I think the number one thing is I don't quit. I mean, like if I'm going to pick one characteristic, you know, I remember starting my career at 29 and like I didn't have anything right. I didn't have the product right. I didn't have the presentation of the product right. I didn't have the audience right. I didn't have the marketing. Nothing was right, but I just refused to quit. And as much as I wanted to quit almost every day, I just didn't quit. So that has been for me in all the five companies, actually six companies, one we sold off, but the five existing companies that we had still today, it's just been a refusal to quit. Despite banks saying no to me, customers saying no to me, despite economic problems, just refusing to quit.
So just keep sort of iterating rather than quitting and just finding, like you said, the product wasn't right, the positioning's not right, the offers, all this stuff, but just kind of keep, well, I'm going to just keep tweaking it until it is right.
Yeah. And also with that, that's a great point you bring up, is continuing to take very high levels of responsibility. So if it was the economy appeared to be the problem or the customer, by the way, sometimes it is the customer, like the customer's just wrong. Like, you know, I hear people say, well, the customer's never wrong. Look, half the customers are wrong most of the time. So, but despite that, okay, despite what you got going on at home or packaging or competition, I remember I had this project, one of the companies we sold, one of the six, where it was dependent upon Apple to produce a product, and Apple was having problems. This is way before the iPhone and the iPod. And they sold a portion of the company to Microsoft and Bill Gates. And part of the deal was to get rid of this piece of technology that my entire company rested on. And so when they made the deal and Bill Gates basically had them bury this new product, I'm sitting there like, oh, how could I have known that, right? But I had to take responsibility and quickly go back to market, not quit, go back to market and figure out how do I shift this product so I can stay survivable. Same thing with the economy in 2009. When the world came to hell, it affected everybody in America. It affected Canadian friends. And we do a lot of work up there. Everybody got just killed. I had to take responsibility for how I created that. Even though I didn't actually create it, the entrepreneur must remain in a place of responsibility. Because if you're responsible, if you can assume responsibility for something, then you can actually change it and control it. The things that you're not responsible for, you have no ability to change.
I love it. I love it. I love it. It's absolutely, absolutely, absolutely true. So in there, you said that you started your career at 29 years old. So looking back, let's kind of take it to that point, because there seems to be this sort of time in every entrepreneur's life when they've realized one of two things, Grant. Either they had this calling to make this huge difference, or as mostly seems to be the case, they found they just simply could not work for somebody else anymore. So at 29 years old, what side of the fence did you see yourself on?
Well, let me just say that, look, first of all, it's a little bit of a longer answer to the question. If you can't work for someone else, you shouldn't be working for yourself.
Whoa.
I'm just going to tell you, everybody out there, like, I had a guy tell me the other day, he's like, I'm tired of making other people rich. I'm like, dude, if you're tired of making other people rich, you can't make yourself rich. And if you resent working for other people, trust me, what you're going to do is start a company and end up with a whole bunch of people that resent working for you. So again, like some people call it karma, you know, I call it basically what's going on in your head. Dude. Like if you resent working for somebody else, if you think that's slavery, then guess what? You can't build a company because you're going into it thinking I'm going to have slaves beneath me. You follow what I'm saying? So
I do.
So for me, it wasn't, I couldn't work for somebody else. Look, I was a star performer where I worked. Okay. When I left the company went bankrupt. Like I got pissed off at him one day and walked out. So it was a totally irrational thing, immature, dumb thing to do, because it took me 3 years to replace that income. Now, that being said, there was no place for me to go in this company anymore. Okay. If I was going to live out my dreams, I had to leave. Okay. And it doesn't mean it was a smart thing to do, by the way. You guys that have families out there, you got a family, you got two kids, like leaving somebody you're working for right now, that's paying you good money, that's providing you, you know, getting rid of some of the risk, that's not a bad thing. You know, working for somebody else is not a bad thing. I know a whole bunch of rich people, super rich. I know a lady just cashed in for $250 million working for somebody else. So if you find the right vehicle and the right person, the right environment, I got people that work for me. Some of them are going to make huge money and the rest of them are going to just do whatever they do because their responsibility is not as high. So I'm giving you a long answer to a very simple question, okay?
It's a great answer.
When I went out on my own, it was an insane, stupid, ridiculous thing. And then once I went out on my own, then I went, got lockjaw. I got lockjaw on it. You know what I'm saying? Like I became like, okay, I got to figure out how to make this work. I mean, looking back now, there's five companies. I'm way, 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 way further ahead than I ever thought I would be. I mean, today I'll make more money in one day today than I remember my goals when I was 29. My goals in 1 year, if I could just make $100,000 a year and work for myself, I'll be great. That was one of the biggest mistakes, by the way, John, I made, that setting that goal, thinking, okay, I left this other guy, I was making 100. If I leave there and make 100 and work for myself, I'm better off. That was probably the dumbest thing I ever said to myself while starting my new business.
Why was it the dumbest? Did it limit you?
Because dude, if you're going to work for yourself, it's better to work for somebody else if you're going to make the same amount of money.
That's true.
Because you're going to work harder. There's no anybody that thinks you're going to go work from home. I can tell you right now, I guarantee you will not make it. If you're going to go work from home and try to make whatever you made at your last job, whatever it was, 80, 150, 250, 400, if you're going to make the same amount of money as you made at your last job, you're better off staying at the last job, no matter how painful the last job is. Because guess what? The new person you're going to work for, you're going to hate their guts.
Yeah.
You're going to hate your new boss, and your new boss is you. And now you're going to be everything that happens, you're responsible for. So, and you're going to have to work more hours. The whole solopreneur thing that has become, I don't know where you stand on this issue, but the solopreneur, the guy that works, or the gal that leaves her job and works from home, nobody is successful working for themselves by themselves. You can't give me one case of one person anywhere on planet Earth in 2,000 years that you and I both know that create a successful business by themselves, working for themselves at home.
Right. So this mindset, I want to know this mindset. Starting at 29, you had the wrong mindset of, I just want to replace this $100,000 job.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you are like absolutely renowned, and it can just feel it in your voice.
Yeah.
That you play a different game than most people. You play a bigger game. You play a game that most people don't ever even get to that field. And so it's like,
yeah,
I can hit a home run, but I'm still playing the wrong game. How, like, what was this, an incremental process, or how do you get your mindset to be like, okay, it's time to play the right game?
Because look, man, dude, you do a great interview, by the way. You're asking some great questions. This is what entrepreneurs really need to understand. This, it's not just the mechanics of the deal. See, what I realized, particularly in 2009 when the economy had collapsed, okay, I owned three businesses at that time. All three businesses, there was one that I ran, there was another one that a partner ran in Orlando, and the third business was the real estate business. They were all doing well. I was making great money. I was making more money than I ever imagined. But when 2009 happened, when the economic collapse happened, all three businesses got frozen up. All my assets were frozen. Some of the businesses were cut in half. And I realized at that moment, oh my God, I was hitting home runs in a park that was made for 8-year-olds. And the problem is, when the economy collapsed, nobody was going to that park anymore. You couldn't sell those tickets to that park, to that venue, okay? The only people that spent money in 2009, 2010, 2011 were big events, big men. It was the big guys that were in a position to take care of their families. And I wasn't, because I had been playing too small a game. Now, that being said, I was still thinking bigger than my competitors. They thought I was thinking big. I knew I wasn't. And if you don't discipline yourself and your thinking, your actions and your thinking, if you don't discipline them to change and get big, okay, the marketplace is going to discipline you. It's going to show you that you're wrong. And it's called gravity on planet Earth, economics on planet Earth. Look, you're being pulled. You're being drawn down all the time to stay on the planet, right? You need oxygen. There's certain things you need, and you need money. And most businesses fail not because they're undercapitalized. Businesses fail because they don't sell enough products fast enough, wide enough, to a large enough, wide enough audience to ever be known. So the good idea does not win, okay? The good idea never wins. The good idea is never, the better product, the better service is not won. It is who can scale out the widest, the fastest, and stay out there. So when economies collapse, if you get cut in half, you still own double, triple, quadruple, or 10 times the marketplace. That's why go big or go home has never been more true. Add to that, go fast, okay? You have to be speedy today. So really, I just started playing a big game, dude, in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, the first 28 years of my career, I was not playing a big game. I was playing make some money, make enough money to play golf, make enough money to fly first class, you know, make enough money to just worry about money.
Right.
Really what you want to do is make so much money that you don't have to worry about money anymore. Now you can start focusing on power and influence.
That's where the game begins.
That's where the game really begins, dude. Where you can call people up that can start moving things.
Nice. So enough products fast enough, and then go wide enough with them.
Yeah. Yeah. So whatever your audience, okay, let's say you're a gym instructor, or you're a yoga coach or a masseuse. You got to figure out how to go wide. If your whole business is going to be based on your hands doing all the work, okay? Are you doing all the instructing? Are you doing all the speaking? First 15 years of my career, man, all my income came from me showing up somewhere and speaking. You know, dude, that's not how you want to make money, because you can't scale it. I know a lot of professional speakers. They're like, I did $1 million in income last year speaking. I'm like, dude, you bragging or complaining? No, I'm bragging. I'm bragging. I said, well, you know what? Call me when you're ready to complain about it. Because there's nothing to brag about, okay? Because all you're doing is selling time again. You're just selling time. And the fact that you're being paid more, you're basically a prostitute, dude. You sell your time. You travel across the country. Somebody gives you 25 grand. You travel all the way back across the country. You're without your family. Okay. You don't have a quality of life. You're flying on somebody else's plane with a bunch of strangers to talk to a bunch of strangers to be paid this much money. Yeah, but I was paid 25 grand for 45 minutes. No, you weren't. You had to fly there. You had to fly back. And by the way, you didn't work for 30 days before that. The plan doesn't work is my point. So the entrepreneur needs to think wide. You need to think big and wide, deep, long, and you need to think much bigger than you're thinking.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So at the beginning, you said your one thing is you do not quit. You sink your teeth in, you get lockjaw. I love that.
Yeah.
So now every business expert talks the whole 80-20 rule, right? Do 20%, get 80% of the results. Do what you're good at, delegate the rest.
Yeah.
Grant, can you please tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
What am I not good at? Man, there's so many things I'm not good at. I am terrible at details.
Wow.
It's not that I'm terrible at it. I just don't have any interest in them. Okay. Regardless of what company it is, whether it's me writing a book or me buying, I'm buying 600 apartments right now. I own a real estate company that owns about 4,000 apartments, about $400 million worth of real estate. I don't worry about the details. I don't worry about the legal details. I don't worry about the contract. I mean, the contract from Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae is a government institution here that loans money or backs it or subsidizes it. I mean, they're going to send me a document like that thick, you know, and like 3 inches thick. I'm not gonna read every page of it. I don't need to. You know, I'm terrible with lawyers. I'm doing another deal right now with a guy and he's like, I'm gonna send you the contract tomorrow. I have my lawyer drawing it up. And the guy said at the end of the call, he's like, who's your lawyer, man? I said, just send it to me. He's like, I've been doing business with you 7 years, man. There is no lawyer, is there? I said, oh yeah, there is. Well, who is he? I said, just send it to me. I'll get it to the lawyer. Cause I'm the lawyer. Okay. Now I don't have a law degree, but I got common sense. I want that contract to say what I want it to say. And by the way, that contract isn't worth anything if me and him aren't good guys.
Wow.
So what am I bad at? Dude, I'm bad at a lot of stuff, you know, and I don't, you know, so what?
It seems exactly. And it seems like the details, you have to be bad because you're going big and wide. You can't also go minute and minuscule because.
Well, I bought a plane a year and a half ago. Okay. I don't fly the plane, but I know how that plane works. Okay. I know that plane is a bunch of computers. And so one day we were leaving the Pentagon and we were flying to Los Angeles. And the pilot, we were only like 4,000 feet off the ground and we were only going like 200 miles an hour. And I'm like, hey, what's wrong? Because we should have been at 500 miles an hour and we should have been about 14,000 feet and going to 40,000 feet. And I said, what's wrong, guys? And they're like, the right flap on the right flap of the is not opening. So the pilot said, we're going to go back. There's two pilots up there. We're going to go back and land the plane at the Pentagon. I said, no, dude, reboot the plane, bro. And they're like, we already rebooted. I said, hey, nothing wrong with that flap, dude. I've been on this plane enough times. The flap is fine. Okay. Flaps just don't go bad. So now again, I don't know anything about a plane. Okay. But I knew that plane is built on computers. And I knew that flap was not a problem because I had just flown in the plane 2 days before. I said, reboot as many times as you need until the flap works. So they rebooted again, and sure enough, the flap worked. Now, that being said, some people are going to listen and say, dude, you're a freaking nutcase. The entrepreneur puts money at risk in order to make more money, okay? Most of you are not thinking about buying a plane, and you should. Why? Because it is the definition of an entrepreneur to put money at risk by a plane so I can buy what? Time. So I can get in front of more customers, okay? So you don't need to know everything, but you do need to know the definition of the entrepreneur to take risk, not with somebody else's money. That's what a capitalist does. Okay. The guys at Wall Street are capitalists. They're not entrepreneurs. If you run a hedge fund, you are not a entrepreneur. You're a capitalist that basically uses other people's money and puts that money at risk to steal money, to take money. The entrepreneur actually takes their time, their energy, their money, their resources, puts those things at risk, bars against their house, whatever, and uses that money in order to make more money, okay? And if you're not making money, guess what? By definition, you're not an entrepreneur.
I love it. You couldn't be more brutally honest.
I mean, it is what it is, dude. Like, if you're going to put on your tax form, entrepreneur, dude, and you make no money, what is that? I mean, the IRS or whoever, the queen over there in Canada is like, He's so funny. He says he's an entrepreneur and they don't make any money. That is ridiculous.
Wow.
I love it. You know, in America, bro, check this out. There's in America, there's 28 million small businesses in America. Now, America is known for the great entrepreneurs that we are, right?
Yes.
So, you know, there's one Mark Cuban and everybody around the world says, oh, all Americans are like Mark Cuban. Well, there's 28 million small businesses in America and 22 million of them have no employees. Now, this is an epidemic here. Okay. 22, literally whatever that number is, 3 out of 4 small businesses in America have taken small to such gigantic levels that they actually have no employees. What kind of business is that? What business would have no employees? Now, I used to think the fewer employees I had, the more money I made. I thought employees, I'm talking from personal experience. I thought the fewer employees I had, the less money I make. And today, if you ask me today, dude, we hire people all the time. People don't cost money. People don't cost you money. Staying small costs you money. So you can't stay small. You got to get big. You got to go wide. You got to go fast. And you got to put money at risk. And you got to be willing to take a lot of you got to be willing to make a lot of mistakes. And if you don't quit, if you simply don't quit, you'll succeed. I guarantee you. Okay. The only people that are failing are the ones that quit. And even to the degree, there's a lot of gradients of quitting. When you don't hire new people, you're basically quitting.
I love it. This epidemic seems to tie back to this idea of if you can't work for someone else, you can't work for yourself. The epidemic of not hiring any employees, it's probably lots of those 28 million people should just combine into actual companies rather than solo people making no money.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, a Gary Vaynerchuk, which I like Gary. Gary was in my office one day and he's like, you know, we were doing an interview and he's like, Shelly makes $40,000 or $50,000 working for someone else. And now today in the internet age, she could actually work from home and make the same $40,000 or $50,000. You know, what a great time it is. Shelly should do that. It's awesome. I'm like, that's ridiculous, Gary. Why would you tell any human being on this planet that making $40,000 or $50,000 makes sense? Okay. I know what it costs to live in Toronto, dude. I've been to Toronto more times than most Torontians. Okay. Okay. I've been all over Canada. I've been in more places than Canada. I remember the day after 9/11, I was in Toronto doing a seminar the next day. And so you can't live in Toronto on $40,000.
No.
Okay. $50,000 you can't live. So no. Whether you work for Bob or you're Bob, okay. You know, or whether you work for Dick or you're the Dick. Okay. Whatever, because the bottom line is, dude, look, you don't have any money. So you guys, that's not freedom, man. That's not time freedom. Oh, I have such a good life. I work for myself and you don't make any money. You don't make any money. If you don't have any money left over, you could make $300,000 a year and not have any money. I know company guys that make $3 million a year. Netflix, one of the great companies, they don't have any money left over, man. So they're still not making enough money to have something left over. And why else would you be in business?
Exactly. I wasn't even in Toronto. You're right. On after 9/11.
Yeah.
I was in Vancouver at the time, but.
Yeah. Well, I was in Cincinnati or Cleveland the day before doing a seminar when 9/11 happened. So all the airlines stopped.
Yep.
So I had a seminar planned in Toronto. I told everybody, I said, I'm doing the seminar, dude. A couple guys, terrorists aren't going to stop me from my business. I flew up to, or drove, actually had to drive because the airlines were stopped, drove to Toronto, did my seminar, and then drove across Canada so that I could get back to Southern California.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to move to projects. You think big, you go wide, you like are willing to put this money at risk and to take the risks to make more money. But now projects, I want to know what it takes for you to decide on a project. And you have an amazing project right now, this new book called Be Obsessed or Be Average. Somebody like you who has huge, massive leverage points around you, what is the process? Is it a written process or a gut process, Grant? But what goes through your head that writing a book and putting all this time, energy, and resources into something like this is worth it for you?
Hey, man, I ask myself the same question every day. Okay. First book I wrote took 3 hours, Seller Be Sold. The book right before this one called The Millionaire Booklet took 2 hours. It was the fastest book I've ever written. I wrote it in 2 hours. We had it translated and published within 60 days to 38 languages. This book took 19 months and it goes out next week. All right. So already on Amazon's number one new released entrepreneur best-selling book, motivation, leadership, finance. So it's called Be Obsessed or Be Average. It's really my life work. Okay. Now, why does somebody do this? You know, why does somebody write a book? First of all, everybody should write a book. You know, it's a great calling card. I mean, if you got a great message and you want to get it out, you should write a book though, just to get clear on your own message. Okay. Not really for other people to read it. Most books are not read. You know, I think the average author sells under 100 books. Now, how did I take this on? I don't know, man. It's insane, bro. Writing a book is an extremely painful thing unless it's a bunch of pent-up content that's sitting in you and just like one day you just puke and it just pops out of you like my first book was. But I've written 7 books now. We have 19 best-selling business programs, sales or business programs. We did a program last week called Mastering Objections. I think I'm going to end up 50-100 years from now after I'm dead, people are going to remember me more for that and maybe this book than anything else I've ever done. If you're going to write a book, you need another, what'd you call it? A project. You need another project going that can fund things while you're doing it. Most people don't have the ability to keep 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 plates spinning in the air. So if I'm going to stop what I'm doing, okay, I'm not going to stop what I'm doing.
Right.
You understand? So I got to figure out how do I add time to my day to get the book done while I'm spinning plates, or can I write the book while I'm spinning plates? Now this book, to my knowledge, is the first book that an author ever used social media to actually write the book. So what I did, I would go on a Facebook stream where I got about 1 million people following me on Facebook, and I would do a stream at night and say, look, I'm thinking about these chapters for my book. I'm talking about my obsession, how I turned obsession and addiction and compulsion and all this negative energy, this addictive quality that I have, this personality, and how I used the energy and flipped it into a success, how I used the energy, not deny it. And people were like, dude, that's cool, man. And I said, hey, what would you call the book and what chapters and what would you want to know? And so literally I would go on every night. I would continue to widen my audience. I talked about with earlier, and the audience started helping me write and construct the book. So if you could figure out as an entrepreneur, how do I take on a new project and have that new project actually fuel the other things that I'm doing, build my audience out? Like, you got to be really creative in the game now. And so the first thing I'm going to do is I'm never, ever going to stop spinning the plates that I have in the air. Those are spinning. My responsibility is to make sure those are working. So whatever the companies are right now, I got 5 of them, I'm doing it. And then this interview comes in. Okay. How do I spin those plates, do this interview with John? Okay. Talk about this book and the other projects I have going on and have a message that somehow suggests to people, you know, maybe this guy could help me, you know, or I'm going to check this guy out, or I'm going to Google him, or whatever the case is. Right. So
the book seems, I mean, just by the title, I mean, Be Obsessed or Be Average, it seems like to epitomize you. Like, you are obsessed with life, it seems. Dude, you are not going to waste a second. You want to do anything you want to do.
Well, that's good. That's good that you think that. You know, like that's what I'm trying to do in my life. I'm trying to find the things I want to be obsessed with, the things that where I can make a difference. My belief is, and I write about it in the book, is that everybody has a reason to be here. Many of you have more than one reason. There's 2, 3, 4, 5 reasons that real. They're like genetically coded DNA kind of things, spiritual, whatever you want to call it. They're your reasons for being on this planet. That's been true for me since I was a little kid, way before schools, way before the social system, way before marriage, way before kids. Dude, I had dreams. I had big, giant dreams. I remember being 8 years old and thinking, I'm going to be rich one day. I want to be rich. I mean, I'm talking, dude, I wanted to be the Godfather, bro. Okay, I remember watching The Godfather and the gangsters and the Jimmy Cagneys, and I'm like, I want to be the guy with the power. I remember watching my dad go to the store, and I realized one day when I was 7 or 8 years old, whoever had the money had control. And it wasn't really money I wanted, man. I wanted control. I wanted to know when we could go someplace, when we could leave, how long we could be there, right? I wanted control. So I wanted to be famous. I wanted people to know who I was, man. I wanted to write books. All those things happened to me before 10 years old. I knew all that. And so throughout my life, I started denying all that. because I was told not to. I was told not to be greedy. Don't want money. Don't talk about money. You know, don't be, get all the attention, you know, all these things you're told not to do. And I started pushing all that down. By the time I was in the 10th grade, I guess I was 15 or 16 years old, man, I started getting in a lot of trouble. And the reason, looking back now, and I talk about it in the book, the reason I started getting in trouble was I was denying my obsessions. And I started being called ADD, ADHD, OCD, all these labels over the years, you know, that I have some kind of nervous attention disorder, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, I ain't got a problem. I was bored. I was bored in school. Okay. I was tired of sitting in class. The problem was, looking back now, is like, I was just denying my obsessions. And I was denying this quality that I wanted to be famous and rich. And I wanted to be married to the hottest chick in the room. And I wanted to have kids that loved me and we had fun. And I wanted to go on the big, I wanted to have my own plane one day and go on the yacht. Look, I'm not going to, you know, I want to be rich, man. Dude, in whatever currency you guys are trading in, gold, silver, Canadian dollars, kronos, whatever the hell, man, pesos, I want a bunch of them. I learned that when I was 8 years old. I lost a quarter one day, John, and I came home. I told my dad, I lost a quarter. My dad said, never play with money. And my grandfather grabbed me and says, never roll with one quarter. You know, he's like, dude, look, the mistake you made was you only had one quarter. Never have only one quarter. And I took both of those lessons. And today I know the mistake was I only had one quarter. It's not that I lost one, because you're going to lose quarters. So I don't know, dude. I just, this book, we're trying to get this book in every school in North America, every Boys and Girls Club. We're trying to get it to every disadvantaged kid, because this book is going to give kids the permission to be freaking maniacs.
I love it.
You know, to come, like, it's happening with millennials already. Millennials are starting to challenge mommy and daddy's advice. Mm-hmm. Okay. People are starting to look around and say, what, man? Come on, man. 17 years you spend in school? It's a long time, man. Okay. I mean, if you take me from kindergarten to the 12th grade, I could have done that easily in 7 years. There was no reason for all that extra time. Okay. So the education system is not creating the kind of products we want in our culture. And we know it. The teachers know it. I want to get this book in every school in North America. So some 10th grader, 11th grader, 12th grader looks at it, just disengaged with, hey, dude, you know what? I want to sit on that engine, dude. You know,
I love it, man. I love it. I love it. All right, Grant, this has been an absolute blast. Let's wrap up with one final question, if we can. This idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So it's this gap that we can live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, right? All of our successes are often projected into the future. So in 1 month, when this book tops the New York Times bestseller, in 6 months, when you hit this insane revenue target, in 8 months, when you buy those 600 apartments, actually, it's probably going to be way sooner. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll close those this
exactly.
Month.
So as soon as you do hit any of these goals, you're going to set 10 bigger ones into the future, which I absolutely agree we have to. But from the outside, you look obsessively like successful. And from the inside, it's always coming in that next part. And like walking towards the horizon, the further you walk, the further it gets. So we end up in this gap. Grant, I know you have huge things, massive things ahead of you, but I would love it right now if you could stop, turn around, look behind you from 29-year-old you until now.
Yeah.
And the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses. Tell me how you feel about it until today.
Man, the only regret I have, I mean, I think about regrets, dude. That's what I think about when you ask me that question. Like, dude, I went too small, you know, the whole time. And it almost makes me sad because I know everybody else is doing this. No matter how much I tell people, look, this whole idea of thinking big is so, it is such a difficult thing to do. And because, and the reason it's important to do is because thinking anything other than really, really enormous is an invalidation to the individual. And I just look back over my entrepreneurial career and just see how much I invalidated myself. And it just hurts me because I know other people are doing this to themselves. You know, when you think about, oh, I'm just going to make the same amount of money that I made at my old job. You're invalidating yourself. You're capable of so much more than that. And you're invalidating your marriage. When somebody says, you know, my marriage has got to suffer for me to be an entrepreneur, or I can't find time for the kids because, dude, you're invalidating yourself. Time management is a massive invalidation of the individual's ability to produce and to create. And so I don't try to manage time. I try to create time. So look, my message to 29-year-old Grant is like, bro, whatever you think, you need to think like the superstars. You need to think about the guys you have read about in books and the women you've read about in books that have done unbelievable, enormous things, and make those your role models. And don't listen to people at your level, and definitely don't listen to people below you. Okay. Reach way up and see what advice those people have for you.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Be Obsessed or Be Average is the brand new book. You can grab it right now. Preview copy and a 13-week coaching program if you buy it and send in the receipt.
Yeah. Send a receipt to me at obsessed@grantcardone.com. This is something we're doing. Nobody has ever done this before. When you buy a book, send me a receipt. I'm going to make you part of a 13-week coaching program where I'm going to go over each chapter in the book with those who have the book already. And I'm not charging anything for that. So I think a book's going to be anywhere from $15 to $29, depending on where you buy it from. And I'm going to give you 13 weeks, 13 30-minute sessions with me, personally with me, not somebody else, not one of my people. So also all the proceeds I get from the sale of the book are being donated to Drug-Free America and Drug-Free World. So we don't leave you guys out in Canada, to educate kids that they're being over-medicated for problems they probably don't even have.
I think you just proved that. You were told you had all the problems, and now look at.
Dude, I was prescribed all these drugs, man. Lithium, Ritalin, Prozac. Awful drugs, by the way.
Entrepreneurial superpowers is what those things are.
Dude, I had a guy tell me the other day, he's like, you got ADD, man, because I was in the office. He was pitching me on something. I'm thinking about 16 other things. You got ADD, man? I said, no, bro, I ain't got any ADD. I don't have any attention for you. Let's go ahead and end this now.
GrantCardone.com is the website. You can see the book right at the very top. If you grabbed your book from any online place, email Grant, obsessed@GrantCardone.com with your receipt, and you get to join his 13-week coaching program for the price of one single book. Do not pass this up right now. So Be Obsessed or Be Average is it. Make sure you go out and grab it. Grant.
Do it today. John, thank you, man.
Once again, man, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. I totally, totally appreciate it. And please keep doing what you're doing, because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks a lot, John. I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Wow. Grant, thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with me, for being so open, and just, I guess, for being obsessed and doing what you do, because it's awesome. And it was very cool. I didn't know as much about you as I thought I did leading into it. So I didn't know where this conversation was going to go. And I like going into it like that, because it kind of allows it to go where it needs to go. But your energy, your drive, and your, I guess, your obsession to go along with your book it's infectious. And I just hope you out there listening enjoyed it as much as I did partaking in that conversation. I hope you learned as much from Grant as I did. Now we reach the point of the show where I get to go back. I get to go back and I get to listen. I get to step outside of the conversation that I was part of and listen as you get to listen. So I went back. Then I went back again. And then I went back one more time. That third time through this conversation, there was one thing that Grant said. There was one thing that he said that was so very, very, very clear to me. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
And if you don't discipline yourself and your thinking, your actions and your thinking, if you don't discipline them to change and get big, okay, the marketplace is going to discipline you. It's going to show you that you're wrong. And it's called gravity on planet Earth. Economics on planet Earth. Look, you're being pulled. You're being drawn down all the time to stay on the planet, right? You need oxygen. There's certain things you need, and you need money. And most businesses fail not because they're undercapitalized. Businesses fail because they don't sell enough products fast enough, wide enough, to a large enough, wide enough audience to ever be known.
And that's the hack. Grant, Grant, Grant. This is awesome. This is huge. This is really, really big. And I love it because There's kind of two things, but it was too good to just sort of cut it into like into a piece. But you have to discipline your actions and your thinking to think big. Right before this, he prefaced it where Grant thought earlier on that he was thinking big, but he realized he was playing the wrong game. He was in the wrong field, right? And the analogy went that you can hit it out of the park. You're playing baseball. You can hit it out of the park all the time, but then you realize that you're playing in a little league field and it's time to go to the majors, and you can barely hit it out of the infield at that point. It's this whole just changing your thinking. And not because it's greed or because you just want to get rich or any of that stuff, although you need money, like he says, to survive as an entrepreneur and as a business. But it's the idea that gravity and economics and things are literally pulling you down at all times, trying to, almost like they're trying to keep you from succeeding, that you have to be elevating yourself sort of mentally and physically with discipline to want to go to those levels. And if you don't do it, either the marketplace, your customers, or the competition will outthink you, will outact you, will out-execute, will out-market you. All of these things, if you fail to use that discipline to think big enough, as Grant says, will drag you down. It's not the ideas that fail. It's not that the ideas aren't good enough. It's not that the best ideas ever win. It's the ones who think big enough and execute hard enough. Grant, thank you so very, very much. All right. Well, this was a lot of fun, wasn't it? Grant Cardone. Wow. Make sure you stop by grantcardone.com/obsessed. You can get the book there or just buy the book on Amazon at this point. I believe you can at least pre-order it, if not get it already, depending on when this is. And then email Grant. I think it was obsessed at Grant Cardone, your receipt. And your 13 weeks of free coaching training personally by Grant in a group setting just for the purchase of a book, which is under $20. I know I'm going to be part of it because, yeah, I didn't know enough about Grant coming into this, but I was kind of blown away by this conversation. And I hope that you were too, because Grant has a way of getting inside of your head and inside of your psyche and sort of wanting to push you further. And I really quite dig that. So the book is called Be Obsessed or Be Average. Check it out. I think I do endorse it. Let's say that. I haven't read it yet, but because it's not out, but I will be grabbing myself a copy. And hopefully I'll see you in that coaching. All right. HackTheEntrepreneur.com. It's the website. Stop by there. Get onto the email list. There's some cool things coming. Like if you're in Toronto or want to come up to Toronto, we're going to be having a bit of a meetup in November. And I'd love to see you there. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. All right. So this is it. This is the beginning of a new week. If you're getting this live, right, or when it came out, which is Monday. So yeah, go out. Have an awesome week. Kick some ass. Think big. Change your perception of what you can accomplish and just go for it. It'll be fun. All right. It's been good. Thank you so much for stopping by. And please, until next time. Keep hacking the entrepreneur.